It's joint work with Michal Bogdanski and Andreas Winter, and it's on the archive. And what it is, it's a kind of quantum privacy. You can think of it as a fully quantum version of privacy. So I think it's kind of interesting in terms of kind of a generalization of usual cryptographic things, but actually the reason we thought about it was for a different reason, which is basically there'd been this long unsolved problem in called coherent distributed compression, and then we used our notion of quantum privacy to tackle the problem, unsolved problem of distributed compression. So I'll explain that in a bit of detail. So I'll just introduce what distributed compression is. Then I'll say what mutual independence is. Independently, it's an independent problem, which you can think about just by itself. And then I'll just show how two solves one. So we can use mutual independence to solve this problem. And then I'll list open questions, I guess, because this is a workshop and there's a whole bunch of questions which come out of it. And maybe I'll maybe just start actually with a little bit of introduction about maybe just for people that are not in the field, maybe just explain kind of why one expects privacy, the relationship between privacy and information. So why decoupling helps us understand sending quantum states. So let me explain a bit about decoupling. So this, so Alice and Bob have some states that they share. I'm going to talk about, let me start by talking about merging and show how we use decoupling to prove the merging. So what we did is you have some states, rho AB, that Alice and Bob share, and Alice wants to send her part of the share to Bob. And we're interested in how much entanglement it uses, or how much quantum communication it uses, or whatever. So what we do is we can just imagine that we have some state. We can take the rho AB state, consider the pure state on some reference system. So we can just think of the pure state ABR. Okay? And the goal now is basically just for Alice to send her state to Bob. So we want rho AB to just, sorry, psi ABR to just be moved over. Okay, so that's the goal, that Alice wants to send her state to Bob, and we just think of it like one big, we take the density matrix rho AB, usually n copies of it, and we want Alice to be able to send the state to Bob such that the total state is kept. So that's just the usual kind of Alice wants to send her state to Bob. How do we know that we can keep the state?
What possible purifications?
Well, the purification is unique up to unitary on R. So because it's just an imaginary reference system which is just sitting there, it really is relevant what the unitary is. But usually we think of kind of sending a quantum state as doing it for all possible ensembles of that state. So you can either think of, you know, we want to send some state, it might be in the 0-1 basis, it might be in plus minus basis, we don't know. So we think of all possible ensembles. In Schumacher compression, Alice wants to send her state to Bob, given all possible ensembles of the density matrix. Rather than think about all possible ensembles, it's just much easier to think of the purification, and you don't need to worry about it.
You mean it's generic, but you mean? I mean, if rho AB is the maximally mixed state, maximally mixed Alice involved.
Oh, I just mean that there's only one, that given any rho AB, there's only one purification up to a unitary on R. So all purifications of rho AB are equivalent up to a unitary on R, is what I mean. And since R is not doing anything, the reference system doesn't really matter. Just think of Schmidt basis, I missed. Okay, so now I just want to show, you can see quite easily actually, that decoupling or privacy is equal to centered. So just imagine that Alice does some stuff, and we don't know what that stuff is, but at the end of the day, she's left completely product from the reference system. In other words, she's decoupled herself from the reference system. She's private from the reference system. Whatever she does, she's left herself decoupled from the reference system. So her state is basically some tau a prime, that's what she's left with, and it's now in a product state with the reference system. So she's private with the reference system, in a product state. Okay? She did something, and the reference system, we imagine what she did was some coherence, and the reference system is left untouched, it's just sitting there, nothing's happened to it. And now, I want to say that whatever is left over, the rest of the state, which in the case of her doing something like sending stuff to Bob, whatever is left, we now, just based on this decoupling, we now know that she sent the state. So I want to show now that this is entire decoupling, so that she must have sent the state. So how do we see that? We just look at her purification of the state. So it's A prime, B prime, because the rest is just with Bob. Tensor, this is one purification of the state. Okay? So here's a purification of this state. This is a purification of the state here. And now, we know that this purification is unique up to a unitary on Bob, right? It's unique up to a unitary on the other system. So Bob could basically create this state, because he can, whatever purification actually happened in the protocol, he could just perform a unitary and make it into the state, because the purification is unique up to a unitary on Bob. But this state is just equivalent up to this state up to a unitary. So this state is actually this state here.
So you're assuming everything is unitary,
right? That's right. So whatever, that's right. Or if she's measured and then by, I mean, either it's with Bob or the, that's right. So the key thing basically is that whatever, I mean, it doesn't have to be unitary. It could, but as long as whatever happens, R is kept as the same state. So as long as the reference system doesn't change in the protocol. So for example, in merging, when we allow classical communication, what actually happens is Alice makes a measurement, but it's degenerate enough that the reference system hasn't changed. But you basically, all we proved was that Alice, so that the reference system doesn't change, and that Alice is decoupled, and that's enough to prove merging or sending.
Right, so she could make a measurement which would decouple her from the reference, but that would also change the reference
system. It might change the reference, but if she made it degenerate enough so that the reference was covered, was kept, then we know that the state must be with Bob. So that's all you need. You don't need to show that Bob is decoding, you just prove the existence of decoding because of the means of purification. So it only needs the existence.
How did the proof go that those two were the same?
Sorry?
How did the proof go that those two were the same?
That this state is, that the reference state is the same as?
No, it isn't. So when you write rho r, does that include b?
No, so rho r is just trace a b of this thing.
Okay.
I said it pretty sure.
I meant why psi r b double prime equals psi a.
Oh. Because this is the only, the state is, the purification is unique up to a unitary. So that means that Bob can create this state, right? So everything's just working on that one principle, that the unitary, that the purification is unique up to a unitary. So let me just say it again. All we know is that rho r hasn't changed, so rho r is still the same state as, so the reference system is the same as here. The reference system is the same as here. That's one thing. Alice is decoupled, so she's now in a state of just product. And now we just use the following. There is a purification which looks like this. The purification is unique up to a unitary on the purification, so meaning that there's a unitary on B prime and B double prime, so there exists some U B double prime which could act on the state. So I'm not writing this very well, but there exists basically some U, B prime, B double prime, which can produce the state. Mm-hmm. And then again, there must be another unitary just on B double prime, which can produce this state. So therefore, this state is now with Bob. So Bob now has, must have A, because it's, because this state is equivalent to the state on tree on Bob.
So what does U B prime B double prime produce? It produces that.
It produces this state. Yeah.
From
acting on the purification of the state.
Oh, so any purification of that state, there's a U.
There's a U on Bob, yeah, which produces
this. Is the unitary coupled prime and B prime prime? Is it like product?
No, it's not quite unitary.
Okay.
So what exactly does B prime and B double prime mean? You're not picking a state on EU.
So Alice does some stuff. Let's just take the simplest case. She just sends some stuff to Bob through a quantum channel. Let's just say she just sends it. So now all we, and she sends it in such a way that this is true. She just sends it until she's decoupled. So she sends it qubits until she's decoupled. Okay? And now we know Bob has a bunch of stuff, and we're going to call it stuff. You know, that's all that exists in the universe is Bob's stuff. We can call it B, you know, B prime and B double prime. And we know that up to a unitary it's equal on B prime and B double prime is equal to this.
I guess I was struggling when I was getting that was if B prime and B double prime are both states for Bob,
yes,
for Bob has, how can you write a state that is a direct product of states of the same kind?
Imagine these two systems, for example. One is entangled with Alice, and one is entangled with the reference system.
Do you want to use the letter psi for
Bob's system?
Oh, I see. They're two different states. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So the underlying system, Bob's system, is a tensor product. The Hilbert space is a tensor product of the.
You can make it into a tensor product.
Does it
actually
have to be a tensor product, or could it be a direct sum of tensor
products? No, I don't think it can be, because that would mean that Eve is somehow coupled to, for sending, it can't be, because that would mean she had some extra thing.
Yeah.
I mean, in the merging case, this thing is that you're left with is basically pure sending entanglement that you gain. But that's not that important. But he's entangled, you can basically form a unitary set that's entangled with Alice separately, and he's entangled with the reference system separately.
I guess you're saying he knows what that unitary has to
do. Yeah, they all know. This is part of the protocol. Published as part of the protocol. So, I mean, this thing is actually all you need to know to be an expert in quantum Shannon theory, because there's not much more to the entire field than this. That's not true. Okay, maybe 2 years ago, that's all you needed to know.
Well, you can prove an awful lot of theorems.
You can prove a lot of stuff, and I'm going to show you an example of something you can prove or prove. But that's basically it. So it's very simple. Decoupling is like sending a state. Once you just prove decoupling and you prove sending a state. Okay, so what is the distributed compression problem? It's the following. You basically have Alice here and Bob here, and they want to send, they share some state for AB, many copies, and they want to send the state to Charlie. Okay? And you imagine again that it's attached to a reference. You can just imagine that it's part of some big reference system. And their goal is to get the state to Charlie. And what we're interested in is how many qubits they need to send to get the state to Charlie. Now, if you consider, if you allow them classical communication, it turns out that it's just equivalent to the usual merging. But if you don't allow them classical communication, they have to just send qubits. And that's it. That's all they have to do. The problem becomes a bit trickier. And
sorry, you went from classical bits to qubits, and that becomes trickier.
To prove, not to do.
Oh, no, you missed it. Okay.
Yeah.
When you talk about communication, it's between A, B, and C, or also between A and B? Like, which communication are we counting?
So you can choose to make your problem interesting or whatever. If you allow communication between them, it becomes not so.
You mean a classical psi channel?
Sorry. So the problem that I'm most interested in is we allow Alice and Bob to classically communicate with Charlie, to not. So the problem when you allow them to classically communicate to Charlie is not as interesting because it just reduces to merging. Basically, Bob sends his state, and then Alice just needs to merge to Bob. And everything you get in time. If you don't allow classical communication between the pair and Charlie, then it becomes more difficult. And this was the answer to this problem was not known.
Are you implicitly giving them all entanglement?
Yeah, let's give them all entanglement. We'll borrow, they'll have to borrow. You don't need to give it to them, you can just count it, isn't it? I mean, you can imagine there's two resources. There's entanglement and there's quantum communication, and you're usually interested in it.
So when you say allow them classical communication, you mean you're allowing that for free?
No, if I allow it for free, it's the problem it reduces.
Yeah, exactly,
merging.
Yeah. If you were to count it, that's...
Well, and if I count it, then the amount of communication they need is given by the mutual information between them and the system.
Then you continue by saying, if I don't allow classical communication.
So the problem I'm interested in is e-bits will e-bits between A, B, and C, and it's not unidirectional, is it? And they're allowed to send qubits to C. So that's, and this we'll call coherence to B. No, so this is, we're just not interested in. I mean, you can imagine that the state they share was produced through some noisy channel, but we're just interested in a case where it's just sending qubits. Now, let me go back to here for a moment. You can ask if Alice is only allowed to send qubits to Bob. How many qubits does she need to send before she gets a state like this? And that will be the cost of her sending the state to Bob.
Now, are you saying without classical communication, or are you saying
without? Yeah, she just sent qubits. So the answer to that is 1/2, she needs to send, so Q, we're only have to send qubits, is 1/2 mutual information between Alice and the different system. And that was solved by, that's coherent merging, solved by Abyssin, Vivitak, Patrick Synapse, and Richard.
Can you describe again what you mean by, when you allow classical communication, it becomes merging? You allow classical communication and also quantum?
No, if I just start saying, if I allow qubits, okay, so I should be a lot more precise. If I allow coherent distributed compression, and now if I allow C bits and E bits and count E bits, I'm interested in the cost of E bits. If I allow C bits for
physical. Oh, you don't count the classical bits.
Well, I can't count it or not, but.
Okay, what are you doing?
Right. I mean, you'll get a trade-off. I mean,
no. I'm not like debating the model. I'm trying to understand the model.
So this. So I'm saying with this, if you're interested in, if you're allowed e-bits and c-bits, then this is just reduces the problem of merging.
But if you count c-bits. Then in coherent distributed compression, you can at least do as well by using your qubits as c-bits instead.
That's right. And effectively, for this problem here, that's all you're doing actually. You're basically super dense coding the classical communication.
So, is the c-bits there coherent? Can you make it coherent so that the E and the C and the Q are actually?
Well, of course, you can relate all these things. This is, I'm here I mean, that's another problem, but that's for the moment. I mean, I could discuss this in more detail, but that's what people are going to ask about. But for this problem, note, if it's ordinary CBITs, I mean, since I get a question, maybe I'll just say, so let's just, all right, so what we're interested in this problem is Alex and Bob want to send their state to Charlie, and we're interested in saying how many qubits they need or how many e-bits they need to do it. Let's not specify the resource for the moment, but it's going to be, it's going to look like it's a rate ranking. So you have, you know, Alice will have to send some, say, qubits, and Bob will have to send some qubits, and you're interested in what this chart will look like. Okay? So if I allow, if I'm interested in e-bits, okay, and I allow c-bits, say, free c-bits, then we know we can do everything through merging. So what it looks like is basically that Alice could send everything, so this is S of A, and then Bob could merge his state with Alice, and that would look like, this means the number of e-bits he would use, we're plotting e-bits here, so e-bits. So Alice would need a reduced amount of e-bits, just given by the conditional entropy, that's the merging result. On the other hand, Bob could send everything to Charlie, and in that case, Alice just needs to send S of B given A. Okay, so you get a point here in this red region. And now, if you add these two, now the point is that if you add these two together, so S of B plus S of B given A, so if I add these two together, then this is just the addition of this thing is just SAB. So there is a total rate.
It's the other BA and AB.
So Alice is going to send S of B given A.
Suppose that they're completely decoupled from each other. One.
So the total, so RA, you can just see that RA plus RB in the extreme cases is going to be given by SAB. And essentially they can have a protocol where Alice sends everything and Bob sends just a little bit, or Bob sends everything and Alice sends a little bit, and by kind of doing various numbers of that protocol, we get the straight line here. So that's called time sharing. So through time sharing, they can get this entire rate region here. Okay. But this, of course, is the best they could do. You know, they can't beat the bound of SAB, because that means basically that they can send it to Charlie at the same rate as if they were together. So if Alice and Bob need to send to Charlie, they can do it at the same rate as if they're apart or if they're together. So you know they couldn't do any better than this protocol. So time sharing is optimal. So that's important. So time sharing is optimal for this.
What's the time sharing?
This is the line here.
Oh.
So if Alice sends everything some of the time, and Bob sends everything some of the time, and when Alice sends everything, Bob merges, and when Bob sends everything, Alice merges, and you get this time sharing protocol, because it matches the Schumacher bound, you know it's tight, so you know it's optimal. You can't send better when you're apart than if you were together. So for this problem, it's essentially solved. Now we can ask what happens when they when they're only allowed to send quantum communication and no classical communication. So now we're interested in coherent merging, or coherent student merging. And now we're interested not in e-bits, but in qubits. And e-bits will allow the e-bits, so they have e-bits, e-bits are qubits. And now we know what the corners are, because I told you the thing I just erased, is that if Alice sends everything, then Bob just sends one half I BR. And if Bob sends everything, then Alice has to send one half I AR. And now there's the time-sharing protocol. And the problem is that this time-sharing protocol gives a total rate, RA plus RB, of 1 half S of A plus S of B minus S of B. Okay. And that we have no way of knowing whether it's optimal. Because here we knew it was we knew time sharing was optimal because of the Schumacher, because we can't beat Schumacher compression. But in the case where we're not allowed any classical communication, we have a total rate and we have no way of knowing if this is optimal or not. And so the question, so the open question, which I'm gonna show how to get, is whether there's a SAG or not, essentially.
So it won't be open at the end of the talk.
It won't be open at the end. All right, I'm now gonna switch topics and talk about mutual independence. So if this was a bit confused, don't worry, I'm starting again and if you repel asleep, you can just reconnect to it. Okay, so I'm going to talk about now. So now we're going to talk about mutual independence, which is the promised title. And in fact, it's a kind of quantum privacy. So what is privacy? Usually, we think, even though in, say, quantum key distribution, we're using quantum states, actually in ordinary privacy, it's just about getting a key between Alice and Bob. And that key is classical. So you do a whole bunch of quantum stuff, but in the end, your goal is a classical goal and a fairly artificial goal. So usually, so ordinary privacy, what do we demand? We want classical bits. So it's classical, it's perfectly correlated between Alice and Bob. So it's uniformly distributed. And it's private. And this is a very artificial, well, I would say in some ways, from a non-information theory point of view, it's a fairly specific and maybe even artificial notion, this key. It's a very specific state you're trying to get when you're trying to get a private key. Okay. So what I'm interested in now is a...
I guess what's your definition of privacy?
Private means that you end up with some key which is not... So, I mean, I don't want to get too into kind of security criteria, but that it's close in some norm to being in a product state. So you want it, and whatever your state is, I imagine that the whole world is a pure state. I want something which looks close to some perfectly correlated keys. Let key A be this thing which satisfies these three things here, and Eve functions here, and I want something which is close in some norm to this.
So it's perfectly correlated between Alice and Bob and unknown to everyone else.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Or close to perfectly correlated and close to being unknown to everybody else, with higher probabilities, if you accept. So
maybe this is why government doesn't want you to work on pornography anymore. They realize that we're working on privacy protocols as well.
So the so what I'm going to now demand is that the thing be private. That's all I care about. So we're not all that. It's private. So I'm going to define what I mean by mutual independence. Private and it's correlated. That's it. Okay. That's all I care about. And I'm going to measure it in units of mutual information. So if so, at so a state.
In shamans.
Sorry, in shamans. I'm going to measure it with mutual information, and I'm going to put a factor of half. So if I have some state between Alice and Bob, and it's now the product would be with Eve, and I'm going to measure the amount of mutual independence by the mutual information between Alice and Bob. And the reason I'm sticking a half in there is because I want to normalize on the singlet. So you can see that, for example, it's better not to measure sometimes. So a singlet has more mutual independence than a classical key, because its mutual information is two, whereas the classical key just has per bit, it's just one, a half, one bit of mutual information.
So is this stronger? You can always generate the classical
one? Not in amounts, no. In other words, I might be able to get this, I might be able to get some private mutual information, but I might not be able to get a perfect key from it. I mean, a perfect key is always has mutual independence, but the other way is not. Okay. And now we're interested in the problem in both, you know, we can be interested in, we'll call this mutual independence, and I'm interested in the zero-way, the zero-way communication, and you can also think of one-way communication or two-way communication. And it's easy to see, so, I should probably keep this, but if you remember, it's easy to see what these states look like. Okay, so if I'm interested in what are the states which have mutual independence, then so people know that for ordinary key, there's a private state. You can actually characterize all keys, all states which have ordinary privacy upon measurement by Alice and Bob. There are these gamma states. So you can now ask, what are the states? How they look? If they have mutual independence, and it's not so difficult. They look like this, partly. Okay, and now we can look at the purification. So we want to look at the purification of this thing. So it must look like this, alpha, beta on some other system. It's called a con. And so this is one purification. That's a purification.
So these A primes and B primes don't live in.
Not necessarily, no. And now I can perform any unitary on A prime and B prime, and it'll be the same purification. So up to a unitary on A prime, B prime, that's what it looks like. So I can write it basically as psi alpha beta A prime tensor over Q and G instead. Tensor rho in prime, and now I put a unitary on A prime. So this is the unique, if I want to write what a generalized state which has mutual dependence look like, a generalized gamma state, then it looks like this. So this is a generalized kind of gamma state.
What's the difference between A prime and alpha?
A prime and alpha. So alpha and beta are on Alice and Bob, and these are just labels. I mean, you can imagine that, you could imagine if you wanted Alice has A prime and Bob has B prime in this state, this would be one kind of a gamma. That would be one kind of state of mutual independence. And now I just think of all of them and I just take a unitary and mix up this part of the state.
It's a bit weird that you're using B.
Yeah, so I just want to say, you know, I want to know if Alice and Bob do some stuff and they produce some state, AB, how do I characterize all the states AB that have mutual dependence? Well, they look like this.
Because you trace out B at some point at the end, right?
Yeah, well, I'm starting with some AB, they just really produce some state.
Wait, don't you need some transformation
from? You can do it because it's independent of B.
Wait, A includes A prime and alpha?
No, that's not what I mean. You've got a different set of spaces on the left than on the right, so you need some isometry or something that translates.
So does A include A prime and alpha? Does A include A prime and alpha? Is that how you want to say it? System A on the right, A prime and alpha on the left.
So Alice has alpha, Bob has beta.
Yeah.
And now in this state example, let's give, it doesn't really matter, but let's give Alice A prime, let's give Bob B prime. And that's the one state. I can generate all the states which have mutual dependence, which have that reduction, by just forming the isometry on A prime.
And then you trace out A prime, B prime,
right?
You get
the
gamma.
No, I don't.
No, this gamma, this.
You just want to see the system A. Where we could is comprised of alpha and A prime.
Yeah. Or
no, system A comprises alpha and A prime.
Yeah. Otherwise, I think that might make the.
And then you're going to use a unitary, not an isometry.
Sorry.
Yeah, you really want an isometry that's going from somehow from
it's fine.
Yeah, you want an isometry that's going. Actually, it looks like you should be tracing out alpha and beta.
You just say that A equals
alpha
A prime.
B are
containing
alpha and alpha prime.
But you don't want to. just
we were talking about this earlier, right?
Yeah, so you want an isometry that goes from.
Well, another way, I think you just want to make everything coherent. So you just want A, just in his notation, he just wants to say A equals A prime alpha and B equals B prime beta. So the systems on each side are exactly the same, we're just looking at them in a different way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Yeah,
sure.
Slightly different. How did you get from the second line there to the third line? Well, you said some words and I didn't.
Okay, so I want to characterize states of mutual independence. So I know that they have to have some part which is purified. And now I say there exists a purification, and now purification is unique up to a unitary on the A prime.
So, and how did you get from phi EP? So you trace out E?
That's
the Gambrel B prime?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so on the right, A really means A prime alpha.
Yes. A really means A prime alpha.
Okay. So it's a composite system. But you're only allowed to do the mixing on the A prime B prime.
And how do you know that the, where's the condition that you've got correlations at all? I mean, you need to impose that as well, right?
That's right. So I'm assuming, yeah, I'm assuming that this is
that has to be correct.
So it implies the unitary is entangling, right? That A prime B prime.
Well, it could be nothing. It could be the identity.
Because I thought about gamma sk, the unit acceleration depends on the.
So it's a generalized gamma sk. I'm using this. It's a generalized. This is a generalization. So maybe I'll put a little g here. Aaron's got sick.
So for gamma sk, for usual gamma sk, I mean, what unit transformation your part depend on the value of the key and parts and parts.
For the gamma state is basically just, I mean, the gamma state is basically just singlet on A, B, tensor sum. And the unitary is just a specific kind of unitary, it's just a unitary that you act on it. But it doesn't, I mean, the keys depend on the dimension of this space.
Okay, but
the twisting doesn't matter.
Where's the twisting at?
Okay, but we might be also choosing operation. Yeah, I thought the twisting depends on the key.
Sorry, the twisting depends on
this? Just remind me about the twisting operation. Yeah.
Okay, so now I apply a twisting unitary to this thing here. We'll call it V. And V acts in the full space. And V is, can people see if I write it here? Mm-hmm. So V is basically it's a projection onto some computational basis, PI on A prime, on AB, tensor some unitary I on A prime.
So why you're not doing this projection operation anymore, using this generalization?
I mean, this is an example. I mean, P bits, these gamma states, are an example of mutual independence, but this is more general, so I don't, I can, but this doesn't seem to include the thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to include a sum over I, that's what I'm
curious about. Sure, why doesn't it?
Because your U there is just a single U.
Yeah, but this U here, I mean, this U is going over both Alice's and Love's.
So you control all of this, you can control the material, which it does.
That U is like that V.
I mean, this privacy now is in the whole, the part that's private is kind of all not
private. Well, but the U you have here is only applied on A prime, B prime, it should apply on the whole space A, right?
That's right.
So why would they be consistent? Yes.
Maybe you have alpha.
Can you turn that into something that looks
so
like
that? Anyone style of the GHZ?
I mean, look, all I assumed was this, right? So this, I'm tracing out this part of the A prime, B prime here.
You're tracing out A prime.
I mean, this state here, take the gamma state.
Okay.
Trace out the ancilla. And you know it is of this form.
So when you say ancilla, you mean which part?
Well, it would be the prime state.
Trace
this. I mean, you know that this is private, right? So trace this out, and you're going to get this thing here. So it must be the same form.
Because which part you're chasing now? I mean, you have A prime, A, B, A.
So
The key is on the alpha beta there. And that is V on the other side of the board. Probably that will solve it.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a. It's Debbie's fault. We were talking physics until 10 minutes before.
I guess
What is it you're trying to prove here? I mean, you're starting with something that the OAB.
I'm just characterizing. I'm not trying to prove. I'm just characterizing what are the states that have mutual independence. I'm just characterizing.
We're the definition section of the paper. So.
No. I mean, this is a proof. I mean, all states which have mutual independence have this form, and that just comes. I mean, it's virtually.
You're starting with something that has all the right properties.
Yeah,
and saying, what could you do to it without ruining those properties?
Well, the converse is kind of obvious, right? I mean, if I start off a state that has mutual independence, it has to be of this form. Because the purification is unique, we just work backwards and see that all states which have mutual independence have to be of this form. Okay. And I can just say that actually that these private states, these gamma states.
You've lost some symmetry there, which is clearly irrelevant. You could just as well have had alpha beta B prime tensor A prime.
Alpha beta. Yeah, I've lost some symmetry by the way I've done it. That's true.
You lost some symmetry by the way you've done it. That's right. So you could have done it the other way and gotten the same result.
Yeah.
Now, why couldn't you take a convex combination of those two?
I suspect. I mean, for the same, it's not clear to me that for the same state, it has the same amount of. Like, given any, I don't know if I take it.
It's clear that it doesn't have to be exactly of that form because you can change the symmetry and split it up differently.
If you took a convex combination and then traced out, you would presumably get the same.
Could you vary that symmetry in the mu? Is that possible?
No,
maybe like swapping some systems or something.
So you can vary what?
You create a swap of A prime to B prime.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
I see.
Okay, so that takes care of this.
Where are we from, Tom?
I have more minutes.
We are at. Thank God. Are we really 5 minutes?
It's actually 4:28.
All right.
We started at least 3 minutes late. So I stand by you having 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll go away with you. I actually promised Graham that it would be over mercifully short.
Maybe too late.
Okay. Then I'll be very quick. I actually want to get to open problems. So maybe what I'll do is I'll quickly finish off and then let people leave and get to their open problems. So all I want to basically say is that so now we're interested in the. Let's go back to the distributed compression problem. And just remember that basically, remember that decoupling is equivalent to sending. Okay? So basically, if Alice and Bob, so we take Alice and Bob, I'll try and be more careful with my A's and B's. And they're going to take their A, and they're basically going to do some unitary and split it into. I'm going to make it a little alpha. So we'll take A going under a unitary going to alpha and a little A that we're going to send to Charlie. Okay. And B is going to some beta and little B and Bob is going to send B to Charlie. Okay. So they perform this they do this. And they do it in such a way, so they do some unitary and send A, Bob does some unitary and send little B. And they do it in such a way that they're private with the reference system. So just taking B and R.
So
So now we're going back from the privacy question to the sending question. You know, we've done that when we change E to R. And because of the decoupling theorem, we basically know that if they're in a state like this, they've now managed to send the state to Charlie. Okay. And because I'm running there, I won't go into the details of how many qubits it would cost to send A and B to Charlie, but you know that the people that do this will know that it's given by the redistribution rates because they're keeping part of the system and sending part of the system. So what did they do? They basically got some mutual independence, they distilled mutual independence, and then they sent stuff. So you can show that the total rate is given by this quantity that I mentioned before. So this is what people knew that it was, you could achieve this. But now we subtract off the mutual independence. So they essentially do this, they extract mutual independence, and then they send the rest. And that's basically, you can show that it's optimal.
So they start with the psi A B R.
They start with the A B R.
They do some unitary.
They extract mutual independence.
By a unitary
on them.
Which sort of puts the mutual independence into the alpha B subsystem.
Yeah. So now they get mutual independence, alpha B tensor R, and now they can just send A and B little A and little B, and that we know from optimality, we know from redistribution that we know what the, I'll just say in words, we know what that is, and when you work it out, it's given by this. And you know that any protocol that works has to produce mutual independence on your side. Because of the decoupling theorem that we talked about earlier.
Are there some examples where you know this now tells you that curve you drew actually does say?
Okay, so now this is the open problem. So, and it's basically we believe that this quantity is zero in almost every single case. And in other words,
quantity, you mean the
mutual independence. So at the moment you're writing it, we would say it's not single letterized. You know you have to optimize over this U, and the U can be very large dimension.
I thought the mutual independence was one half the mutual information of alpha and beta.
It is, but now you imagine, you basically, yes, it is. But you don't know what alpha and beta are, so you have to take a big size. So the usual thing, you take M going 2. But unlike usually when we deal with these things in quantum information, it's this horrible, we have to go to n copies, blah, 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 and go to infinity. The thing is here that we actually believe that this is zero in almost all cases, except for a set of measures zero state. So if you take any state and you twing it a little bit, it'll have zero mutual independence. That's a conjecture.
But we had such a conjecture about a year ago.
Sorry? Oh, you mean people have been talking about these ones before. But maybe I'll give. if I'm really out of time, maybe what I'll do is I'll just very quickly mention one of the open problems because it's so trivial and easy to say that even people that didn't understand a word of the talk can understand this very simple problem.
Are you saying that we could have just come in now?
It would have been a lot less famous than all this. Yeah. That's the great thing about watching talks on video. You can just, your friends can tell you it's completely crap. 5 minutes where you mentioned it.
It's good for the fight.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so I want to give a reason why we think this is zero on generic cases. And I'm going to mention now a classical problem, which is the same. So it's the classical version of this problem of mutual independence. And it's very simple. And you can tell your friends over coffee. It's the following. So with probability 1 minus epsilon, Alice and Bob are given, let's see. So probability that Alice and Bob get 0, 0 is given by 1 minus epsilon and Bob goes 2. And same for probability of them getting 1, 1. And the probability that they're anti-correlated is just given by epsilon over 2. And E, in this case, gets a bit which tells her that they're correlated, we call it C, and she gets a bit here, in this case, that they're anti-correlated. So Eve knows whether they're correlated or anti-correlated. Okay? But almost all the time, they're correlated. So only some epsilon at the time they're not. So they're getting bits, they have a string of bits, and almost all the time they're correlated. Occasionally they're not, and Eve knows when they're not correlated. And now they can't talk. And the problem is, can they get mutual independence? Can they make themselves private? Can they just disclose their mutual independence? They don't need to get perfect correlations. They just need to get some correlation. They need to be private.
So Eve knows when they're correlated or anti-correlated, but she doesn't know if it's 0 or 1.
Yeah, she, of course, knows nothing local about what they have, but she knows globally whether they're correlated or anti-correlated. So she is correlated with their correlation. So this is a nice example. She's correlated with a correlation, and that makes it very difficult to see what Alice and Bob can do, because they don't know the correlation. They just know what they have. Eve doesn't know what they have. So it seems like it's impossible for them to do anything, because they really can't really access Eve's information. Yet, it's quite difficult to prove, even in this very simple case, that there's no mutual independence. So what it means is that when epsilon is 0, they have a bit of mutual independence. And as soon as epsilon is just epsilon, then they have none. So it appears to be highly discontinuous. And that's why we say that, you know, in any generic case, when you kind of have epsilons along the, if you have full rank state, this thing is just going to be 0. Mutual independence is going to be 0.
Is this single copy or many copies?
In this case, yeah, many copies.
So what have you tried in
the the best idea that the best idea appears to be majority vote. If you do majority vote on n copies, then you can get one bit actually. But the rate is 0. So that's the best you can do, is you can get one bit. If you give us n copies and do a big majority vote on all your n bits, then as n goes to infinity, you get one.
So if
you don't even get one bit, you just get something bounded away from 0.
Are they're not allowed to communicate or anything?
That's right.
Do you know anything when they're allowed to communicate something with
it? I think that's probably a very nice open question, because when they're allowed to communicate sublinearly, you can imagine if a single quantity is not single. So that would be, I think, interesting.
But you suspect that your example, you don't think you have a protocol for this particular
thing. I mean, we haven't been able to prove the Nogo theorem, we haven't been able to find a protocol. So, all bets are off, basically. So maybe I'll end with that, and there's other open questions that people are better, maybe we'll be able to think. I'll end with that.